Welcome back to Healthcare Connect. I'm Dr. Radio, Sirius 114, XM 119. Thanks for listening. Our phone lines are open at 877-NYU-DOC, 877-698-3627. And you can email us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at docs@sirius-radio.com, docs@sirius-radio.com. Hi, I'm Andrew Rubin, host of Healthcare Connect, here every Thursday on Dr. Radio. And with me in the studio for our next half hour is Allison Vogel from our managed care insurance team. And as always, we are here to answer any questions, calls, comments, concerns you have on healthcare insurance, accessing the healthcare system, doctor bills, hospital bills you're confused about, you lost your job and you're worried about finding insurance. This is your opportunity to call in to us and see if we can help you out and navigate the healthcare system, the healthcare insurance industry. It's really complicated, as we've been talking about each and every week on Healthcare Connect for a long time. Healthcare reform is on the horizon, and it's not here yet. And people are still stuck in the system. There are 50 million uninsured Americans out there. There are a lot of people who are underinsured. There are a lot of people who don't understand what happens to them when they lose their insurance or they get doctor bills. And we're here to help make that a little bit easier. So, Allison, it's pretty crazy times, as we talk about all the every week on the show with healthcare reform.
It is. It's really scary. And one thing you just said was people who are underinsured, and the scariest part of that to me is people don't know they're underinsured until they're in trouble.
With healthcare reform on the agenda, front and center, and President Obama, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have to give the guy credit for keeping this a high legislative mm-hmm. priority. And I think everyone, even though there's a lot of bickering right now going on in Congress, I think everybody agrees that healthcare reform, Republican, Democrat, Independent, right, left, center, everybody agrees that we have to do something. And I think even those who are most against the bills that are coming out of Congress now on the Democratic side, from the Democratic, democratically controlled House and Senate, I think even the most vocal opponents would still agree we have to do some form of healthcare reform.
Absolutely.
But it is a little scary to me, and we talked about this last week on the show, Allison, that the American public is only knows what they know, and if they have insurance and they like it, they think they're okay, and then they find out that when they need it, it may not be there the way they thought it was there. So a lot of people think they're okay, and then they find out they're not okay.
Exactly.
Because they don't understand it in the first place, even though they thought they understood it. Or maybe they didn't understand it. A lot of our friends, I get calls from them all the time, not at work, at home, and they don't get what their insurance benefits are. During open enrollment season, they call me up with questions, and they still don't get it. In fact, I have a friend who's a banker, is a lawyer at a big firm in New York City, who said he's very much involved in the reading the news and being informed, and he's very educated. But he actually sent me an email the other day, and he said, "I'd really like to sit down and actually take me out to dinner." Sure, that was nice. But he said, "I'd like to sit down and have you explain to me exactly what they're talking about in Congress, because I don't get the implications of any of these bills, and I don't know what's true or not true, because the Democrats will come out and they'll say what their bill does, and then the Republicans will say why they're opposed to it, but you don't really have a filter out there. Well, you do on Healthcare Connect, but every week. But you don't have someone who's sort of independent and objective, like we try to be on this show, who can actually explain the pros and the cons of these bills mm-hmm. to get to healthcare reform. So listen, as we said last week, this country, whether you're conservative or Democrat, we, as a general rule, I believe we always migrate towards the middle. Whether it be on legislation, or when we have a conservative president in office for 8 years, you always tend to migrate back to the middle. When you have a liberal president in office for 8 years, you come back to the middle. I think healthcare legislation is going to get done the same way. So it's interesting, because we have a really exciting guest who's going to be joining us. It's Steve Forbes. He's the president and chief executive of Forbes and editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. And I think everybody knows who he is. I mean, he's run for as a Republican candidate for the President of the United States two times, and he is very well-spoken and outspoken in a good way on politics and policy and health and even healthcare. He actually just wrote a new book called Power, Ambition, and Glory. He wrote this with John Priebus and with the foreword by Mayor Giuliani. It's not about healthcare. I'm not going to kid anybody. So people are going to say, why are you talking about the book on Healthcare Connect? What I liked about the book and why I wanted to actually have him on the show, Steve Forbes on the show today, and he'll be joining us in a second, is because he talks about leaders, and the book basically, and I'll let him describe the book, actually, is, do we have Steve on the line?
Hi.
Hi, thanks for coming on Healthcare Connect today.
Good to be with you, thank you.
So I got to tell you, I really like the book.
Thank you.
And when I got the book and they said that you were available to do the show, I was expecting to open up a book about healthcare policy. And it wasn't there, but if you could tell us a little bit about the book, because I did think it was an interesting book, and then if you'll allow me, I'd like to bring it back to healthcare.
Sure. Well, the book's about leadership and about how over time, whether it's ancient times, like the Greek and Roman times, or modern times, business leaders, human nature does not change. The challenges of successful leadership, failed leadership do not change. So my colleague John Priebus and I, he's a classicist and has written books on the ancient world, collaborated on this book. We found that if you can learn very, very helpful lessons by looking at ancient leaders such as the Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar, Hannibal, Alexander the Great, Cyrus the Great, and see what made them successful and unsuccessful, and apply it to modern business leaders. We discuss a number of modern business leaders, such as Hank Greenberg of AIG, who, like a Caesar, built a great company, but suffered the equivalent of assassination, and the company's now in dire straits. Or positive leaders like Alfred Sloan, who created the modern General Motors, his successors did not have his kind of vision and leadership, and give lessons to people on, as they pursue their careers, make their decisions, on the essence of leadership. But part of it, of course, is coping with crises. You are going to get curveballs along the way, but also learning to bring people along with you. None of these leaders could just dictate, do this, do that, and long succeed. When Alexander fell into that trap, he ended up getting an army mutiny, and his empire fell apart.
It was, I have to tell you, it was really interesting, and I'm a history buff, both, you know, current history and ancient history, and to see the parallels from these leaders of their times and their foibles, if you will, and then have them brought out with modern day business leaders. It was really extraordinary how closely and how much, I guess, we don't really change.
Yes, human nature does not change. Times and circumstances do, but the strengths and foibles of human beings does not change.
Yeah, and I thought it was very well done. And I'm gonna make a stretch here, if you'll allow me. So, you know, as you know, or you'll know now, this show is focused on helping our listeners navigate the healthcare in business, and we take a lot of calls from people who are stuck in the healthcare system and don't know what to do, and we try and solve their problems on air each and every week. But we do dedicate a substantial amount of airtime to healthcare reform. Because let's face it, everybody's talking about it, and I know that you have some strong opinions on it. But keeping with the book, as I was reading the book, I was trying to figure out what leadership quality from you know ancient times would best be suited to get healthcare legislation passed. And I kept coming back to Caesar. Should we have some form of dictatorship in here right now and just to jam healthcare reform through and then deal with the consequences later after Obama, you know, is gone 8 years from now or 4 years from now, whenever the White House changes again. Is that the only way we can get something done? Because it was interesting. You know, you look at these great leaders of their time and with all the things that made them not great leaders in the end, they did get a lot done at a time when it was really hard to get things done, whether it be Rome, Greece, you know. How are we going to get something done? Because so many of our listeners want something to get done. And when you're, sometimes when you're too democratic in the process, it almost, you can't get anything accomplished.
Well, there are two good examples from the ancient world that I think apply for lessons today, particularly on health care. One is Alexander the Great. We just mentioned him, a very gifted man, and in that sense, President Obama last year, despite displayed Alexander-like qualities in the campaign, where people like the Clintons totally underestimated him and he bested them and won a race that a few, 2 or 3 years ago, seriously thought he could win. But what he's been, the mistake he's made on health care, I think, is an Alexander-like mistake, and that is he did not do the preparation of bringing people along step by step on what this, or what various reforms would involve, what it would mean, so people could become comfortable, understand what the implications are, instead of getting repeated surprises. For example, we were told that we wouldn't have to worry about our own health insurance. Well, it turns out if we change jobs, that might not be true. If we, in 5 years, I was shopped as an employer, see that the kind of plan we have at our company, which I think is a pretty good one, probably wouldn't pass muster with the government after 5 years.
Yep.
So you get these surprises, and that's, and when, you know, health care, a lot of issues we know are important, but health care is personal. And if you don't lay the groundwork on that, even if you have to do it piecemeal, you're going to get the kind of frustration, anger, and anxiety that we see today. By contrast, you talk about democracy. By contrast, another example in the book was Xenophon.
Yeah.
Not many people know of him today. He was a great ancient historian, formidable military leader, as it turned out. But he was a young man. He was an Athenian aristocrat. And as you know, at the time, Athens and Sparta hated each other. But he went along with a group of Spartan mercenaries on an adventure lark, to fight in one of these succession wars in Persia. And in a nutshell, the Spartans backed the wrong horse, backed the wrong guy. So 10,000 of these hard-bitten mercenaries, their leaders have been murdered by the Persians. They find themselves surrounded, cut off in the middle of Persia, outnumbered 50 to 1, 100 to 1, ready to be slaughtered. So this Athenian aristocrat comes up, rises up, and gives a rousing speech, says, we don't have to do this, we can get our way out, here's how we can do it, and ends up leading the Spartans. But the thing is, the lesson for today is, precisely because he was an outsider, and precisely because these mercenaries weren't going to take orders from anyone, he had to have assemblies of these mercenaries for every major decision he wanted to take. He had to persuade them every step of the way. And there are times when groups of them would go off and do their own thing, but he had a sense of when you go in the front, when you hold back. He knew at times that he let others take the lead because there was still that distrust out there. But it's an inspiring example under the most adverse circumstances possible, where instead of just saying do this, do that, he had to persuade, adjust to the feelings of the men, and ended up pulling off a miracle.
Is this president doing that now with health care? I'm not sure. I want to think he's doing that, but he's been awfully silent on some of these on some of the more critical issues that are being debated.
He has been, and he's unfortunately approached it the way he did with the stimulus package earlier this year, where people, okay, we have an economic crisis. Whether you agree or disagree with it, some action had to be taken. But on health care, where you don't want to be rushing in and doing things that are going to have implications for you and your family, your friends, for years and decades to come, you want to be sure that if you're going to do something, that it's been thought through, that we the people are comfortable with it, understand it. So it's a slow process. Just, it must have been frustrating for Xenophon at times to have to explain things. But that's how you get cooperation, and that's how you get movement. But just in another thing I just was shocked to find the other day, they've taken it out for the moment, but I'm told some of the Washington politicians will try to put it back in, is this thing of bounty hunters and Medicare. If you're on Medicare and say you have an auto accident, and it's the other person's fault and your car, you know, Medicare covers you, but let's say your insurance company wins a judgment against the other driver, that the government can come in and take that money. But now they're going to allow so-called lawyers, but as bounty hunters come in and file a suit on your behalf, even if you don't give them permission.
So we'll take them out. I didn't read
what
that.
What they get from the insurance companies, that's outrageous.
I did not read that. You know why? Because, I mean, I know they're executive summaries, but we were talking about this last week on the show. You know, these bills are 1,400 pages long. And we're pretty informed. We do a lot of prep work before we come on air every week, and we find these little jewels embedded in the legislation, you know, every week.
And that underscores precisely don't try to do everything at once.
Well, we've been said, we love hearing you say that, because
people are going to rebel against it and you end up doing nothing.
So, you know, I'm so glad you're on air saying this, not just because you wrote a good book and that's coming out, but because we have been, no, I'm serious. We, you know, I will say this, we try to keep this show non-political. I mean, we talk politics and we talk about healthcare reform. But we don't take necessarily a side based on political party. We take sides based on what makes sense from healthcare reform. And we've been saying this all along. Go slowly. Pick the things that we know we can do and do well and afford to do. We don't have to solve a crisis that's been evolving over decades, you know, by summer recess. Or quite frankly, solve the whole thing by the end of the year. It's impossible.
Just going to be dealing with unintended consequences for
and things quite frankly that I don't believe we can afford to do. So let me ask you a question. A lot of, you know, we get calls a lot, and our phones are lighting up now. We get calls. What do you tell people who say, well, you know, Ruben, you know, you're Andrew, you're talking to Mr. Forbes, and it sounds like, you know, You're saying nothing's going to get done, and because of what you're saying, nothing's going to get done. And isn't it better just to get something, even if it's the wrong thing, as opposed to, you know?
Well, in terms of healthcare, that would be like saying, I've got a pain, but the doctors are going to diagnose it. But heck, let's do something and hope for the best. No, you want the diagnosis done right before you rush into something. And so we don't want to make mistakes on the health care. And there are some positive reforms that can be taken. For example, if you're an individual buying health insurance, as you know, if you live in New York and you want to buy a policy offered in Pennsylvania, it's illegal to do so. So let's let people shop nationwide for health insurance. On tax treatment, businesses get tax deductions for buying health insurance for their people. Why not let individuals get the same kind of deduction? Give them a tax credit so they can have a choice. In terms of tort reform.
Oh, absolutely. We talked about that.
Why not study the idea of, and let states experiment with health, specialized health courts, so you don't have to go before a jury and hope a trial lawyer takes your case if something you think has been done wrong. You go before a panel of people who are expert. If something was done wrong, you're compensated. If not, you're not. But at least you have something that is systemic. You aren't rolling the dice with a jury, and you can get justice done. So there are a lot of things on the state level that can be done, and if they work, well, then let's apply them nationally.
It is astonishing to me that, you know, because this has to be budget neutral, and we've been saying this every week too. We believe that the $1 trillion number that they're talking about is not even close to what it's really going to cost, but I'm not seeing a lot of cost coming out of the system. And one of as we always say, the low-hanging fruit on this is certainly malpractice reform. You know,
right.
an obstetrician who has to pay $200,000 a year for you know, malpractice insurance. I mean, those are crazy numbers. And this is something we can get done, yet it's not even on the table.
Right. And one of the things we should also, I think, take heart from as we examine this thing is that why can't we get the kind of productivity and advances, cost savings, and health care that we get every other part of the economy? As you know, for example, LASIK surgeries made great advances over the years. In real terms, conventional LASIK, which most people don't do anymore because they can get better surgery, costs a third less than it did 10 years ago. You see the same thing with cosmetic surgeries. You know, in the last 15 years, the growth there has been sixfold in the United States. Huge advances in the technologies there. Yet we haven't seen the kind of inflation there we've seen in the rest of healthcare. So we can get productivity. We can get more healthcare availability if we have the right incentives in place.
I agree. So in the couple minutes we have left with you, give us your prediction of where this is going to end up.
I think where it's going to end up after this recess is, maybe this is just a hope, they will do a couple of minor things and then sit down and try to come up with something, not just as a backdoor legislative deal between Democrats and Republicans to say they've done something, but figure out what are things that can be done and then let people weigh in on it. So if you make one thing about a leader, and I hope the president realizes this, You don't have to get everything done at once. And if you do it over 2 or 3 years, it's just as big an achievement as trying to do it in 2 or 3 months. If you get it right over 2 or 3 years, you're going to be remembered favorably than if you make a botch of it in 2 or 3 months.
So I think we agree, but
minor things, and then they'll sit down, maybe appoint a commission or something, but try a piece-by-piece approach so people can get comfortable.
But can you do that in Washington? I mean, listen, you know this as better than, and certainly than I do. I mean, you're a two-time presidential candidate. Can you, everyone says if you don't get it done in the first year, you know, you never get it done. I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah, look at Franklin Roosevelt. Everyone talks about the 100 days. When did he get Social Security done? 2.5 years in his first term.
Yeah. It makes sense. It really does. So anyway, Steve Forbes, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. The book, I got to tell you, it was really interesting. And I think a lot of people should read this because there's a lot of interesting lessons in here about what it takes to be a leader. And it sort of maps out what makes a good leader, and then what some of the traps you can quickly and easily fall into: power, ambition, and glory. And it's by Steve Forbes and John Previs. Am I saying that right?
That's right.
And with the foreword by Mayor Rudy Giuliani. And best of luck on the book tour and with book sales. And
thank you. Enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, we hope to hear more from you on healthcare.
Maybe we should make you healthcare czar or something.
You know what?